All right, I think we'll get started. So if last remaining people could take their seat. So, the big debate. The motion to be put forward is Australia is ready for digital currency innovation such as Libra. So we have a for and an against, and you will decide who puts forward the better arguments. The objective, of course, is to flesh out the issues and ideas, and we've got a great panel. So I'll just quickly introduce the panel. So here on the pro side, speaker one will be Heath Benek, founder and managing director, Holland Global Investments. Then Michael Bessina, the partner at blockchain group Piper Alderman. And then we have Emma Poposka from Brontech, a regtech company based here in Australia. On the against side, we have Dr. Luke Deer here. Freelance researcher, writer and speaker on financial technology focused on Australia and China. Then we have Professor Toby Walsh from the University of New South Wales and Michelle Bullock, Assistant Governor, Financial Systems from the RBA. So a great mix of regulators, academics and practitioners. Before we get into the debate, which I am going to monitor with discipline and... and keep you all on track because I'm already 15 minutes behind, so I'm in trouble. Michael's going to ask some questions of the audience.
Thank you very much, Warren. If the AV guys could work their magic. Most of the time people say put away your phones, but if you could whip out your phones, we could just have a little interactive series of questions. We're going to ask you this question up front to take a poll. It's the closest I could get to the worm. We don't have a live worm for panels yet. But I just have a few questions I'll run through, and I'll probably move on when we get to about two-thirds of the room. So if you can open your browser and go to menti.com, and there's a code 527772 for those at the back or who left their glasses behind. And then this should let you vote, and if it works, show up on the screen. A resounding no vote. Was that one of you guys?
Here we go. We have some responses coming in.
Quick.
This is very interesting. Okay, undecided.
Well, they're not voting.
Look at... Oh, Warren, we might be able to save 47 minutes. All right. Well, we will come back to this question at the end and see how we've done.
Democracy in action.
It is very slow moving, but we're getting there. 70.
Actually, you probably shouldn't be doing it showing people the responses as you're going because you're conditioning the response.
Now, this is someone who knows about surveys.
I like to trust
methodological problems.
All right. Well, I think it's a fast response. You're all an excellent crowd in responding quickly. And being so brutally honest. All right, the last few stragglers are getting in. Thank you so much. Excellent. All right, well, we'll call it and move it along on this. I think you can still go back and answer on your phone, maybe. I just want to find out if you understand what blockchain and digital currencies are. Your options are you have no idea something about illegal payments online. You understand it a bit, but you're not the ones on stage. You have a good understanding of it, or you're working... Oh, look, someone's working on a project with digital currency or blockchain. That wasn't you, Emma, was it?
No.
I like to give the smart Alex an outlet. Excellent. Well, that went up really, really fast. Thank you very much. That's quite a knowledgeable crowd we have here today, which is great. Now, moving on quickly, I just thought I'd very quickly get what you think is the best use case for digital currencies. I've only put four options: international transfers, peer-to-peer purchases, automated payments, or lending and financing. Well, thank you very much. And then I think I had one last question,
destroying the planet,
which was how much impact do you think digital currencies will have on the payment space in the next 5 years? None. They're all a big, fat scam. Not too much. A lot, but hidden behind interfaces or massive disruption. That's a very interesting outcome.
Mm.
So, Michelle, I think they're answering fast enough that it's not giving too much conditioning. Well, excellent. And then in the end afterwards, we can come back to the first question again.
Fantastic. All right. Well, thank you for participating in that. So let's get this debate underway, which, of course, you will reassess at the end. So I would like to invite Heath to lead off.
Yeah. Okay. Look, I've got my... I'm down as the... because my day job is managing a global equity fund focused on innovation and disruption. And I wear a couple of hats here today because... We have investments in Visa and MasterCard in that, so I'll disclose that they're fantastic businesses and very supportive of the current regime. However, we also see we launched probably August this year, and Michael joined me in this cause actually to get Australia involved in the Libra conversation, and I'll just outline why we see this. So. Broadly, you know, from what I put my investor hat on, we can see that money is evolving globally. And that conversation really started with Bitcoin solving digital scarcity and offering what I would probably deem as, if I put my institutional investor's hat on, as potential for market-based money. We're also starting to see very clearly the central bank digital currencies coming about with conversations that have been going on, particularly with China, has been very much on the front foot here. And I think from a market-based perspective, that's something that needs more attention the market's actually giving to. And then in many ways, it's not surprising that a company like Facebook, which basically solved social scalability, is actually getting involved with actually looking at ways of actually enabling money to be transferred in a way that's nearly instant, very low cost globally, addressing a big issue. And you can see that, I think, today. Although I wasn't here this morning, what I did see through the headlines, of course, is the Reserve Bank Governor talking about this particular issue. That comment has been made by a lot of central banks globally. From my perspective, I come from the regulated space, so we're big believer in being an investment manager. It's all about protecting people's wealth, being very prudential, and growing your wealth over time. So I come from a conversation here, so where I've been spent a lot of time in the crypto space to understand where things are heading, but at the same time with a regulated hat on. This, when Libra was announced, we could see that the potential for the technology to enable this to happen, to really solve financial inclusion. A lot of the companies I invest in, so we invest in Google, Amazon, others like Alibaba, Tencent, they've all got this mindset of trying to solve big issues for the globe, not just for 25 million people here in Australia. What they're trying to do, and what the Libra organisation is actually interested in achieving, is setting up a global financial system that will enable financial inclusion to be solved, something that's very scalable. The biggest issue, like you see this today, when outside of, say, China, for instance, the biggest companies we have in financial services, JP Morgan, Wells, 50, 70 million customers, but the question is to really... to get the economics, we need something that actually can scale. So that's the first thing that we can see that's actually happening here. The technology can allow that to actually allow this to happen. The other thing that's very interesting from our perspective, if you've actually had a hard look at the read through the what's being proposed, is that the Libra currency reserve is a substantial innovation in its own right, and it's not deserved. The actual risk profile of that is something that's quite interesting in terms of for bank capital structure, because we're actually creating, now you can think about that Libra reserve as being a broadly diversified pool of assets and across US dollars, etc., that's very significant in its actually in its own right. So we can actually see the potential here that you can actually lower costs dramatically on a very safe asset, and also create an open financial system as well, which is very different to what we're used to today, in the sense that we can actually promote competition. And I would actually go to say further that the potential here going forward is also in a digitized financial system to actually have a lower risk financial system, which is that's a bigger conversation. But when I put my... I'm an actuary by trade. I've covered financial services for a long time. A lot of it's about this discussion. When you're looking at it, it's about risk. And that's the other potential here, which will become more evident as time goes on.
Fantastic. Thank you, Heath. So to your turn now, Michael.
I thought you were going to alternate. We could alternate. We get to dominate, or yeah, does Dr. Alternate. Luke want to go first?
You
want to
alternate, do we?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so Dr. Deer?
Let's alternate. Okay, great. Thank you, Oren. Okay, well, I just want to start addressing that last point, which is about financial risk. And I think, you know, so my view is, like, from a financial risk perspective, I think Australia is not ready for Libra. And I think there are a couple of reasons for this. One is in terms of the whole issue of AML and KYC and the sort of broader black economy issues. Now, we've already seen this is a huge problem globally, obviously, and it's also a big problem within the financial system in Australia in terms of the issues that we've seen over the past month or so, for instance, Westpac, and the problems that they've... It's interesting because what essentially Westpac was doing was trying to get around the reporting system, the SWIFT messaging system, and get around the reporting system for correspondent banking in order to basically, you know, allegedly to sort of essentially reduce costs and reduce that burden. And we're letting through huge numbers of transactions go, which were in some cases look clearly linked to patterns of, you know, illegal activity, child sexual abuse, and those sorts of things. And I think now that's a problem with the existing system, but I think the question is, will something like Libra, which is a private digital currency, which is essentially what the project is designed to do, is to build completely different payment rails outside of the existing correspondent and bank transfer system, which will be managed by a private consortium of companies. Now, my argument, I guess, is not that it's not technically possible for there to be decent AML systems put in place. It clearly is. But can we actually trust... two issues. One, can we actually trust the Libra Association, and particularly companies like Facebook, which are involved in it, to deal with the AML KYC issues? That's one question. And secondly, if we can't leave it to them, do we have the regulatory infrastructure in place to actually monitor and surveil those sorts of transactions on a big level? And this is a big issue. One letter, which was from a couple of US senators to, I think, PayPal, MasterCard and Stripe in October, pointed out that on Facebook Messenger in 2018, of the 18 million cases of known transfer of child sexual abuse, imagery and so on, 13 million of those were taking place through Facebook Messenger. Okay, so, and then you want to add a payments transfer capacity to that. So this is a big problem, particularly when we're talking about financial inclusion and some of the most vulnerable people in the world being able to essentially open up that system. Now, my argument, I guess, is that can we trust the Libra Association, Facebook, etc., to run that compliance themselves? And if we can't, what system is there in place to deal with it? Again, I think it's technically possible. If you look inside of, say, China as an example, but it's a walled market and a walled garden, the biggest private digital payments platforms, WeChat, Alipay, have been fantastic in terms of financial inclusion. And they've also been able to, build KYC AML systems, which have been quite successful. But the regulator in that situation has recently moved to establish a national clearing platform, which all non-bank payments providers actually have to pass their transactions through. So it allows a central clearing and regulation to actually have surveillance and monitoring of those transactions. Now, that exists in China, but I don't see that infrastructure being in place to deal with something like Libra. Although they're trying to address real problems, I don't think Libra is the solution that we're looking for at this stage.
Very well done. Less than 4 minutes. Superb. The ball is in your court.
See, I like alternating because as a lawyer, I'm not instinctively argumentative. I'm born for it.
You don't want to build an argument.
So the AML and KYC point, thank you very much for raising it, Dr. Luke, because it's a particular bugbear I have, and it's very poorly misunderstood. The comment in the letter about CP, or child pornography, being shared on Messenger was closely followed by the congressman's comments to MasterCard and Visa that if they didn't become uninvolved in the Libra project, they would find the similar level of scrutiny over their businesses as Congress intended to place on Libra. I thought the inclusion of that in the letter from Congress was very unfair and trying to sling a bit of mud at Libra via Facebook. And I think the Libra project has unfortunately been tainted by a everyone loves to beat up Facebook mentality that seems to exist despite a lot of people liking to use it. I fear that some financial providers fall into a similar bucket of as a love to hate, but everyone would miss them very much if they weren't there. I often give this example from a global head of financial crime of a international bank I interviewed on stage at the ADC forum in Adelaide earlier this year, where I put the question and said, how much money laundering is going on in blockchain and the cryptocurrency space? And he said, well, number one, we can't really assess it yet because we don't have the technology. Number two, I'm confident saying that there's no more than in the so-called real world because cash is king when it comes to money laundering and illegal transactions. And number three, people would be a fool to use any blockchain or cryptocurrency system for money laundering because it creates a near immutable record of the transaction to be used in evidence forever. Unfortunately, the AFR reporter in the room only took point one and ran a headline on it the next day, which caused a bit of concern to that speaker. But that's the narrative that comes out to say these things are terrible. The best example I have for why any digital currency is awful for crime happened only about a month ago when the Department of Justice in the United States took down the world's largest child pornography ring ever discovered with terabytes of illegal material, and almost every single customer of that site was arrested simultaneously with raids around the world. Why? Because they used digital currencies to pay, each transaction of which could be traced openly through a company called Chainalysis back to a cryptocurrency exchange where they bought the currency, and because of the AML rules, they were then able to be identified. Now, that was pulled off with an incredible sting operation that was kept completely under wraps until these simultaneous arrests happened in, I think, about 25 countries. And pretty much all the customers have already pled guilty in a pretty short period of time. And that is a perfect example of why the systems and digital currencies are awful for crime, because they can be so easily used to track transactions back and identify individuals. That creates a privacy problem, but that's the inherent tension between trying to identify money laundering and terrorism financing and preserving individuals' privacy. But I think that blockchain and cryptocurrency and digital currencies are the solution. They're not the problem. Because if you think cryptocurrencies are great for money laundering, wait till I tell you about this thing called cash. It's a way bigger problem for cash transactions, and the government's moves to set maximum cash thresholds for transactions has run into some resistance because people like the idea of being able to take a wad of cash down and buy a car, perhaps without realizing that a lot of people like to use giant wads of cash in crime. But cash remains far more prevalent in that area. I think that Australia, to address the question more directly, Australia can't not be ready for digital innovation via digital currencies because China's already doing it, because the Libra Association is pushing it forward. During his brief tenure as Prime Minister, Malcolm Turnbull said he would be in favour of a digital Australian dollar if the anti-money laundering and counter-terrorism financing aspects could be built into such a currency. But the benefits that we're currently missing out on don't end there, because this traceability of transactions in digital currencies is quite powerful when you take it up to a policy level. Right now, the government has to rely on quarterly reports and surveys to see where the economy's at. I'm going to put up my hand and say we're probably in a technical recession now, but we won't know about it until end of January or February, because there's a lag on statistics. But digital currencies, which enable aggregate real-time viewing of what's happening, can also give really important dashboard signals to a government to take policy steps quickly. That's one of the key reasons why I think Australia should be moving very fast in this space to get towards digital currency, because even having a small subset of usage of digital currencies in the real economy gives this incredibly valuable data, and it's not just for the government. Fintechs who want to see how customers are behaving and spending money and where things are going can access systems that have readability. Certain cryptocurrencies and digital currencies are very, very open, and others are incredibly closed, and there's probably a midpoint that a market will find to be sensible, but certainly currencies proposed like Libra are being based in open source systems. So the comment was put, can we trust a not-for-profit association that's publishing all its code for everyone to see to do the right thing and ensure that their checks are correct? Well, if they're not, they're going to be found out, because they have already said they'll publish all their code, and they do. That's one of the most fascinating things about the blockchain and cryptocurrency world is the openness, and it's the exact opposite of the traditional financial world where you needed to keep source code secret You needed to use security by obscurity. The open systems mean that the systems are under attack from day one, and if they're not built to be good enough, they fail fast. So if they survive, they, subject to the panel before us talking about quantum computing breaking cryptography, are effectively unhackable. In the 10 years it's existed, the Bitcoin blockchain has been under constant attack and has never once suffered a hack of the actual chain. Plenty of people have had their passwords stolen, but no one's actually broken the cryptography behind it. And if quantum computing comes in the future, we have far bigger problems than digital currencies running into issues, because our ATMs and regular banks will be struggling to keep up with that, with attacks from people who have that level of skills. I'm running very short on time, but I think I've addressed all those points.
Fantastic. All right, thank you. That's well done. So we'll now pass over to Professor Walsh.
So I'm a technical person, so I'm going to focus on my technical concerns. First of all, to say that I'm a great fan of the blockchain. I think it's one of these groundbreaking ideas. We don't have them very often. It's perhaps not as groundbreaking as some of the snake oil Bitcoin salespeople would have you believe, but it is wonderful, and there's going to be some wonderful applications, especially in finance-related areas, share market, share registers, land registers, things where you do get real benefits by removing friction, removing a middleman from the system. But I really don't think we're ready yet for something. I mean, they made it easy to debate the side of the table because they said, such as Libra. That makes it much easier because one's technical concerns hinted at by the opposition just now. So I'll raise three technical concerns. The first is privacy. You are creating a immutable database of all the transactions, and certainly the tech industry, particularly companies like Facebook, have not shown a very good track record of treating our data, the privacy of our data, with any respect at all. And now they are claimed to put some safeguards in place to keep that record free from our personal data, our digital data. But there are likely loopholes in. There's a find a friend system that they're suggesting in it. And really, the move fast and break things mentality, I don't think is one that we should put too much faith in. Facebook, especially, a company that has misused our data. The idea that they could get their hands on our spending data as well as our behavioral and preference data and put those things together, and then the misuse that could be done with that. I do love cash for that reason. It's a perfectly anonymous way of spending that I'm not going to be have my brain hacked by advertisers. So that's the first thing, privacy. The second is security. It barely a week goes by without us hearing of some new disaster, some wallet being broken or whatever it is. Now, it's true, of course, that the blockchain itself has never been broken yet. There is, amongst some of my friends, a lovely urban myth rumor that the blockchain was invented to actually work out when RSA had been widely broken, because, of course, the price of Bitcoin will plummet at that point. And anyone who was at the last session, there was a catalogue of examples of how quantum computing and other things are going to potentially compromise this technology. So the thought that we might invest a significant fraction of our economy moving through a currency like this, and the risk that might pose if it were ever hacked in any way, is one that I think we have to treat very seriously. And then my final concern is one of scalability. Now, we don't really know how something like Libra is going to work. In fact, Libra doesn't know how Libra is going to work. At some point, it's supposed to transition to what's called a permissionless, decentralized, distributed mechanism, and the people behind it will happily admit they have no idea how we're going to do that. That's something for the future. And at the moment, it's a permission blockchain with it's very unclear, though, and I've listening to many of the talks this morning, I have huge great respect for the scalability and the robustness of the payments network that we have. And to think that we might entrust some of this to the internet which, despite the fact it was designed to be a nuclear-proof networking system, is clearly not. I mean, all of the tech companies do a remarkable job, but all of their sites go down with painful regularity, far more regularly than the payments network ever suffers any brief hiccups, compared to once a month one of the big tech giants has Twitter or Facebook has some significant outage. So we've got a long way to go, I think, before we can actually put the same sorts of confidence in the internet, which is really held together with duct tape and sticky paper. It's remarkable. It really does
1 minute.
Work. And I wouldn't want our economy to be completely dependent upon, and our payment system to be completely dependent upon that duct tape, because I know exactly how brittle it is in places, and we frequently see outages. I mean, it was not surprising, when 9/11 happened, the internet stopped, right? We discovered that there was actually, World Trade Center was actually a bottleneck for the internet, and there's plenty of others that have been hidden from sight that will rise up and bite us hard if we do put our payments on them. So I encourage you to be much more cautious. Thank you.
Fantastic. All right, so to wrap up and finish the pro side, I'll invite Emma Popowska to conclude.
Yeah, thank you. Well, I'll just start with the arguments why we don't want to accept or why we think we're not ready for digital currencies or cryptocurrencies. So far what we've heard was privacy, was threat of money laundering and terrorism financing, and the last one, security. Well, none of these are characteristics actually of digital currencies or cryptocurrencies. The same issues we have with the current banking system, with the current payment system, with the current banks. Recently, we were aware of Westpac's breach of AML-CTF regulation, CBS. I don't want to name names, but we are all aware of these issues. Even fintech companies like PayPal, all of them are vulnerable to the same threats, right? The second thing is privacy. I'm not sure how many of you are aware that banks are collecting and investing money in companies that are collecting your data and selling to the data brokers, that then they're used to market at you through platforms like Facebook or Google or similar. So individuals' data, I'm not saying that's why we should accept digital currency and privacy is not an issue. It is an issue, but it's not an issue characteristic to digital currencies. And same security. Everything is hackable today. As Michael pointed out, the blockchain itself, Bitcoin's blockchain itself hasn't been hacked, but lots of wallets, lots of applications that work on top of it have been, same as banking systems, banking apps, fintech platforms. So none of those things separate digital currencies from cryptocurrencies, from the traditional currencies. We're actually using digital currencies every day. You're using digital payment methods, so they're not that different. So let's go. Then what I want to talk about today is the difference between digital and cryptocurrencies and why that might be a threat. However, why we should be open to the idea of experimenting with such financial innovation. So to me, first the topic of the debate, the last three words, such as Libra, I think it introduces a bias in the entire conversation. I think there's a lot of negative feelings towards Facebook lately, and it kind of puts a taint on the entire digital currency, cryptocurrency space. However, let's see what are digital currencies and what are cryptocurrencies, why they're different and why they're so important. So I don't think digital or cryptocurrencies are, the wrong definition would be currencies that are secured by cryptography. I would like to think that all currencies are secured by some kind of cryptography or all payments method. Cryptocurrencies are different from digital currencies is because their monetary policy, it's encoded into an algorithm. So there is an algorithm, someone created a code that will tell the network participants when they will issue new currency, how much of that currency will be in supply. So there is no central bank, no centralized body that decides, okay, we'll have, you know, we'll increase interest rates, we'll decrease interest rates, this is the basket that we'll use to secure this currency or similar. Digital currencies are a little bit different. We can have a digital representation of a currency that we currently have, like a dollar and then a digital dollar, or we can have a digital unit of something that can represent a basket similar to Libra. What is interesting with digital currencies is cryptocurrencies that have been issued lately is they're all private money. They're not issued by a central bank. They're not backed by a government. So my argument here would always be, if they're in a government, there are antitrust rules. We think monopolies are bad for pretty much any service or product out there. Why are they bad for money? Why there is a monopoly on money? If the private sector has figured out to issue or create things more efficiently, in a better way for consumers, why can't we try that experiment with money? And this is where my strongest argument towards experimentation is. We've had private money in the 19th century. They worked well, but we were lacking two main things. We couldn't solve two main issues, and that was the problem with counterfeits and the problem with tracking the different currencies, privately issued money that we had. Currently, we have technology for that. And that's why I think we should give it a try again to test privately issued digital currencies and see how that will impact the system. And I don't think there the issues around privacy, security, and money laundering and terrorism financing are greater or significantly greater than what we are currently seeing with the traditional banking system.
Thank you very much. Okay, so the final contribution from Michelle.
Hey, thank you. Right. So is Australia ready for a digital currency innovation like Libra? The answer is no, but I think actually the question really is, do we need an innovation like Libra in Australia? The cross-currency issue is a separate one, I think, but the question is, do we really need something like this in Australia? The key point about money is it requires trust. And what we've observed, at least with the first innovation of cryptocurrencies broadly, Bitcoin's a good example, is huge price volatility. It's really an asset. It's not a currency at all. It's not money. Stable coins of the next innovation, they've tried to sort of settle down that price volatility to give people sort of trust that the money they put in will be the same sort of a money they get out. Libra's trying to do that by backing itself with a basket of currencies. but the point is that Libra will still have exchange rate volatility relative to any individual currency. So anyone in Australia who wants to hold Libra is going to be subject to some exchange rate volatility. So up until this point, the regulators, which is really my angle here, the regulators have really been interested in these digital assets, probably more from a taxation and an AML sort of perspective. There's been a general view here that they're not widely used for payments because of the fact that they're so volatile and they're not backed by anything in some sense. There's no trust inherent in them. And they don't pose financial stability risks. But this changed with the announcement of Libra. Now, I'm not hung up on Libra. The fact is that even if Libra doesn't succeed, something else will come along. So the regulators have got to focus on this for two reasons. First, if you can find a way of addressing price volatility, then you might get it widely used. And also, if it is widely used and it's one of these large networks and they can leverage that, there could be a very big take-up and it'll be systemic very, very quickly. And if it's systemic, then that potentially poses issues for financial stability. So regulators have now got their eyes on this. The G7 put out a report recently which looked at this. The Financial Stability Board's going to put out a report to the G20 in 2020. And the G7 report acknowledged that these sorts of innovations might provide quicker and secure cross-border payments. But they also said There's issues to do with legal certainty, money laundering, terrorist financing, data privacy, efficiency, integrity, consumer and investor protection, trust, and taxation. So you've got all of these issues that have to be addressed. If Facebook and the Liberal Association want to come and do what is effectively, it might be banking business, it might be a money market fund, it might be a security, they've got to accept that they're going to be regulated like everyone else. So the bottom line is that if they're going to walk into this space, they've got to be regulated. We're not ready for them because the regulators haven't yet decided how we want to regulate them. The G7's already said they're not going to be allowed to launch until the regulatory issues have been addressed. You can't have an unlevel playing field in this situation. You can't basically disintermediate a whole financial system simply because someone else has found a loophole through it. So the challenge for the regulators is to harness the potential benefits, but make sure that we regulate on a technology-neutral and a function-based approach so that it's not subject to regulatory arbitrage. So we have to do that. We want to also get an understanding of the nature of the promise that's being made here for these new digital assets. So what rights does the holder of a stable coin have? I invest in Libra. What sort of rights do I have? Can I get my money back? Can there be a run on Libra? What happens if the value of the deposits and the securities that are underlying it all of a sudden fall in value? How much money do I get back? How does it work if there's multiple countries with all these different regulatory regimes? How do we all make sure that it's not the lowest common denominator, that you don't have one regime that has the worst possible, the lowest possible common denominator in terms of AML-CTF taxation? How do we make sure the whole thing just doesn't move to that jurisdiction and disintermediates everyone else?
1 minute.
So, cost and timeliness of cross-border payments, it's a really important issue. Is it for Australia? Do we really need it in Australia? We've got so many payment options in Australia. We don't need Libra as well. We've got enough. It's already been pointed out that we've got digital money here in any sense. And the other point I would make is that I think really Michael, in terms of his discussion about the benefits of a digital currency, he actually made an argument for a central bank digital currency. He didn't make an argument for a private sector digital currency. So from a regulator's perspective, not ruling it out, but we're not ready at the moment. It may not even be Libra that's the one that ultimately gets up. But in the meantime, the regulators have to make sure that we've got our hands around what is effectively a very important asset for people who might be depositing there. Thank you.
Thanks, Michelle. Well, from my recollection of monetary economics, a currency performs two primary roles, a store of value and a medium of exchange. So it's always important to think about what a digital currency would offer over and above the existing arrangements in terms of those issues. And clearly, medium of exchange is a critical element given the changing digital technological landscape. But it's quite clear that apart from the inevitability argument and the fact that the technology is there, the other side here is extraordinarily worried about the security and privacy and regulatory issues involved. It seems to be the battlefront. So I'm going to give the fourth side a rebuttal and a chance to pull together any questions they might have or any comments to round out their arguments.
I'll just give a little story. Imagine in 17...
We only have a few minutes.
Imagine it's 1780. Someone says, I'm Captain Cook. I'm going to sail to this country down under that I think exists. People say, I don't think you should do that. What if the boat springs a leak? How can you tell us the boat's not going to spring a leak? How are you going to ensure that everybody on that boat is paid properly? Oh, hang on a minute, I just have an idea to sail a boat. We need to know exactly how everything's going to work, how many planks of wood, carbon footprint, everything on this boat before you even go anywhere. At that point, the Dutch get Australia, and we never get to have the English colonisation. And a lot of the digital currency and Libra feels this way. The Libra Association got up before Congress and said, we will comply 100%. And Congress said, don't you dare do anything until you comply 100%. And they said, we're going to comply 100%. How dare you promise to launch a system that's going to be terrible until you comply? We're going to comply. And there seems to be this strange shouting match from various sides, with risks being raised about a system that isn't fully developed. It goes without saying that all these problems have to be solved, and they're a big job to do. But it shouldn't be stopped, as some have suggested, because there are challenges. People rise to the challenge and achieve great things. People didn't climb Mount Everest because they knew exactly what they were going to do at every single turn until they got to the ridge at the top. They did it because they wanted to achieve something. And moving forward with innovation in a digital currency will have lots of challenges. There's a whole idea around know your transaction in digital currencies where you might be able to one day do away with AML and instead treat the money as dirty and not have to worry about the individual who's coming in, which is an incredible idea with a huge amount of regulatory hurdles to get to before we could ever be there, but in some ways could work vastly better than just identifying a person in a transaction instead. But these are challenges that have to be worked through, and I think once Australia adopts an approach, and I think, as Michelle said, a function-based approach, but working through the problems, I think that it can be achieved. And Australia is ready certainly to start that journey, I think we might agree on. But it is a long journey, and I don't think anyone would suggest otherwise.
Can I just say, with respect to the original owners of this land, perhaps we should have taken a little more care before we moved fast and broke everything for them.
Yes.
Very good. I think when you actually, and I can understand Michelle's perspective, and look, I come from the regulated space, so we wouldn't be involved if we're not having a regulated conversation. The key thing is this: the Swiss have changed the social construct for money. People are only starting to realise this. You can, regulatory arbitrage happens all the time. When I'm investing in banks, asset managers, insurance companies, we're always looking at regulatory arbitrage, what it's called. But if there's a more effective and efficient way to run our system, because when you look at this, nobody disagrees with the innovation. Nobody disagrees with the innovation. It's just the messenger that's involved in this, right? But the Swiss have changed the construct. The reserve will get up. The question is who engages, right? That's the big question that we have to ask ourselves as Australians. We've got a very healthy financial system. We're substantially overweight financial services, biggest sector on the exchange, on the ASX, and biggest contributor to our economy. And if there is a safer, simpler way to actually run financial services, and this maybe is what the Swiss are actually suggesting, maybe you need to pay attention to that. Because the reality is my six-year-old, she can actually get on, she will be utilising Libra. She can do that. You can do this today. This is what's happening in a borderless digital environment. So the question for us is better, if we believe, to be involved in the conversation, to shape the conversation, to address all the issues that have been actually outlined here today, to bring everybody along for that journey. Nobody disagrees with the innovation that's actually being actually proposed. And I am sitting here with Visa and MasterCard in my portfolio. I can tell you this is, and you look at those businesses, they're great businesses. Substantial barriers to entry for those businesses, huge network effects, great for my investors, but I'm up here actually saying what we should be doing is really trying to help a lot of people around the globe actually make a difference in their lives. We need something that can scale globally, very substantially. We are tethered in financial service to our local, basically to our countries. And this is the conversation that's going on globally. We can see that we're living now in this borderless digital world, although we've got these locations made up by various geographies. So the importance of us being involved in the conversation is very much along the line of thinking about this as like when global digital media came across our shores and impacted newspapers and analog media. There is an analogy here going forward. Those who actually can embrace this can have a far more efficient, far safer financial system in a digitized world. That's the opportunity that we actually see when you actually look ahead with it.
So I don't want my six-year-old running into your six-year-old in the playground because I got enough financial security issues in the household.
So do you want to give your six-year-old a YouTube channel and a payment device? I think there's a lot to be welcomed in terms of like private digital innovation in payments, and I think one thing which is great about this is that it's actually pushing regulators globally to sort of come and try and address seriously the deficiencies in the system. Now, I think that those deficiencies are quite
huge, and I think there should be more private solutions developed. But I think the thing with money and trust and security around those sorts of things is that, that provision of money, I think there's a benefit in that being provided as a public good, and there being public infrastructure to do that. And I don't think that's easily got around by private consortia. I think, you know, there's a role for private consortia, but I think there has to be some sort of public interest which sets some sort of rules and boundaries about how that's actually done effectively. And a lot of the arguments that you guys have made for Libra are arguments, just as well as Michelle has mentioned, for a central bank digital currency, although I think there's also questions about the surveillance capacity of that, which I think are questionable as well, and still a role for cash. But I think, I think the question is, you know, should money, should payments be provided as some sort of public good infrastructure? And I think, you know, Libra brings that question back to the fore, and I think it's up to the public, members of the community ecosystem, to respond constructively.
Michelle?
A lot of assertions, it's more efficient, it's more efficient financial system. It's like, we don't know this. It's actually, I don't think there's any evidence at all that suggests that these digital currencies are more efficient at moving money around. Because remember, the whole point about the financial system is that it's a fractional financial system that basically funds the economy through credit. So you want to basically take away that function, marginalise them. Now, the point about the digital currencies, you asserted about, you know, we need them around the world. 90 to 95% of payments, notwithstanding that people get on the internet, are still domestic payments, and they are made to domestic merchants by domestic people, merchants that pay their bills in Australian dollars, Australians that earn their wages in Australian dollars. Why do we need to have a Libra or any other sort of digital currency that offers exchange rate risk vis-a-vis our wages and our costs? Just doesn't seem to me to be a case to be replacing an Australian dollar payment system for 90% of payments with this esoteric international thing. It might be good for cross-border payments. Credit cards are pretty good too for those of us who have them. For those who don't, maybe there's a role for these digital currencies, not saying there's not, but just holus bolus throwing out the financial system because we've got a new shiny play thing, I don't think is the way to go.
Well, okay. We have one more rebuttal here, and then I think we're going to need to go to a show of hands.
I think no one is saying that we're going to replace tomorrow the Australian dollar with Libra or Bitcoin or whatever. They will run and exist in parallel. And there are use cases where something like Libra or another digital currency will be more convenient or more useful than, let's say, the Australian dollar. For example, in our company, we do a lot of purchases from overseas, a lot of our technology is imported, a lot of the services that we use are developed, let's say, in the US. In the last year, just because of the exchange rate, our cost increased. Not because the companies that we are working with increased the price of their products, but just because the Australian to USD exchange rate. So if we can de-risk that risk as a company, we would do so. So there are a lot of use cases where digital currencies might outperform, overperform the, let's say, the Australian dollar, and obviously the usability for domestic payments or for getting wages or similar might not be as attractive to Australians. So what I'm just trying to say is that if we experiment or adopt digital currencies, it doesn't mean that you won't be able to use Australian dollar in the future.
Well, that's reassuring to know. Okay, so it is time now to go to the audience. My sense of this is there was a very tough argument to be made, but on the motion of... You're going to put it up on the screen?
Maybe man do the screen again. Thank you so much.
You're going to do a vote on the screen?
So we had a resounding no initially, and then we'll come in for a...
So are we going to vote? Are we going to pull out there?
Yep, we'll... Wow. Skip that one and go to the final question. So now you can change your vote if you want.
So please, we need to get that number up.
So it's no.
Or I will be asking for a show of hands. All right, we're a third of the way there. And my sampling, knowledge of sampling is...
I got that at 140 before.
And we are now over time, and it looks like the results are coming in pretty conclusively.
I don't know if the needle's moved.
No, the question is how much have they changed?
I think that's more exactly right.
There's more undecided now. We've confused everyone.
We have seen a mass confusion. Wonderful. Can we? Okay, so let's take it at...
There we go. We'll take it at 140. So I think it's bang on the same number of no's.
Can you go back?
We jump back. So let's see if the technology will work. It's not blockchain-based. So we had... Oh, there's a few no's have dropped off and...
All right, so I think we see the results there. So I would like to...
Experimental error.
I'd like to thank the four side for convincing five of you that we are ready for Libra.